Welcome back to another episode of Entrepreneurs of Edmonton. Matthew Donnelly here with my co-host, as always, Chad Bamman. And today we are talking to Reid Clark, who is the president, CEO, and owner of the Stingers Basketball. And I grew up playing a lot of basketball. Chad was one of my earliest passions. So this was a tremendous amount of fun to talk about, you know, the growth of a new league, the success the league is having. So what were some of the takeaways that you took from a business standpoint?
Well, you know, one thing is passion. Reid has always been an athlete. He figured out early on maybe he wasn't going to be paid to be an athlete, but loved just being in sport and was always involved in that. And I think that opened him up to the opportunity to work with the Stingers as an employee at the start, right? So that was pretty interesting to me. How do we connect passion with career?
And I think a lot of us can feel that, where we're passionate about it and realize very quickly we're not going to get paid to do this. So we need to find another way. And Reid was able to do that for sure. And so what was kind of next?
Well, you know, the other thing to me is risk taking. I mean, he had a lot of, frankly, opportunity. You know, he worked for very large organizations in the marketing world. But, you know, when the opportunity came up and they were looking for a president, he kind of put his name in the hat, and, you know, the willingness to take some risks to try and go, well, I don't know if I'm perfectly qualified, but I have a passion for the game. I understand how to build a brand. Like, he'd worked in marketing in various organizations. So, you know, willing to do that, right? Kind of take that risk.
Yeah. And so obviously he got that role and is able to do something really fantastic. What was your takeaway about what he's building and how he's doing it?
Well, you know, when you're not obviously hockey's the big dog in Edmonton, but you're not that, how do you get involvement in the community? You have a short season, just all the ways that the Stingers are trying to be front and center in people's minds in the community and create that connection to the community, mm-hmm. which then leads to, you know, the in-game attendance. We recently went to a game. It was phenomenal. Attendance was sold out. The place was packed. And people having a lot of fun, and, you know, wasn't expensive, you know, compared to some of the other entertainment options in Edmonton. And just a really good time. And, just his involvement with the school board of Edmonton to find opportunities to refresh courts and things like that, get kids playing, I thought was really amazing and really admirable.
All right. Let's follow along to Reid's stories. Check it out.
Welcome to the Entrepreneurs of Edmonton podcast. Tune in to other entrepreneurs who have successfully navigated the Edmonton business landscape through their stories of adversity, triumphs, and strategic relationships. And now, your co-host, Chad Bamman and Matthew Donnelly.
Well, awesome. Welcome, everyone. Reid, welcome to the podcast. Really excited to have you on today and kind of dig in a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey and of course, a little bit around what's going on with the Stingers. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. But first question, since you're in the sports world, your favorite athlete of all time, who is it and why?
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Favorite athlete time. That's an easy question. It's Michael Jordan. I'm a big Jordan guy. Always have been. I still have a room in my basement right now that's only Jordan stuff.
Really?
Frame jerseys, shoes, just junk I've collected over the years, to be honest, but everything Jordan.
You seen the movie Air?
No. I was actually just texting my buddies. I want to go tonight. I want to let's do a late night movie and go check it out. So
it's really, I went and saw it.
Yeah.
It's really good. Mm. And that's really interesting how that whole thing shook out with Nike and Michael Jordan and his family. So it's worth it.
Okay. I've read the Phil Knight, the shoe dog book. So.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Nice. So who's yours, Chad? Who's your number one athlete of all time?
I'm an Edmontonian, and it's Wayne. Wayne Gretzky, Manners. Man. He's my GOAT.
Oh, I thought you would have took like a race car driver. I thought that would have been your like.
No, different sports, different guys, right? Depends on what we're talking about. But
yeah,
you know, for me, all time Wayne Gretzky. I grew up, I watched him, right? So I saw him play live.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Did you see Jordan play? Like live?
No. I was thinking about that the other day. I've never been to a game to see Jordan play. No, yeah. I've seen LeBron play a couple times. I've seen Curry play, but never Jordan. No, I was a little too young early to get there.
When did he retire? Like early 2000s?
Early 2000s.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would have been tough to get to. Yeah. I find if I'm looking at favorite sports athletes, I go through chapters, like different areas of my life. Like when I was younger, I was a goalie and left-handed. So Grant Fuhr. really resonated with me because all of a sudden he was like me, like I'm the only one. And when I started playing hockey, they didn't even make goal equipment for left-handed people.
Yeah.
Right. So I have to use to stuff newspapers into like the equipment so I didn't get hurt. Right. So like Grant Fuhr would have been one, but then I was a big basketball player in high school. So Jordan was everything. And I remember wallpapering my walls with pictures and everything. So I can relate to the fantasy of Jordan for sure.
So what was it about him that made him your favorite of all time?
Well, I mean, you can't deny the record, right? I mean, to win three in a row, to go retire, to come back, to win three again is insane. It's never going to be done. To hit basically your last shot like that over Russell in Salt Lake in game six and, you know, to retire. Let's just throw out the whole Wizards thing coming back. Sure. Even though he had some big games there, people give him a hard time for that. It was actually decent. So that whole legacy piece and I think kind of his mentality, like to just be as ruthless as he was and dedicated as he was, is kind of special. Like it's not something I want to be personally,
because
I don't know if it's the best character traits, but to be like that, I mean, to be the best of all time, you kind of have to have that mentality.
He demanded a lot.
Everything and it takes everything personally and finds motivation in every little nugget of something to be better. So I think that's really admirable.
When I was younger, I didn't follow basketball a lot, but it was, I remember I watched Jordan's documentary on kind of, I think it was on Netflix. Ruthless was a very good word to describe him. Because he if you weren't there, like he could care less about you. Like,
and that's why, like, you can compare him to LeBron all you want and look at the advantages on both sides. But LeBron's actually a nicer guy than Jordan. And that's why I think he'll never be as good.
Yeah. What's interesting about Jordan is not just what he did athletically, but what he's done business-wise. Yeah, like, huge. If you look at his net worth and kind of what he's into now, it's unbelievable, right?
Well, that whole, like, Nike Jordan thing, and I was talking to some guys in youth basketball in Toronto last week, and they're trying to get deals from, like, Under Armour and Adidas to sign up these, like, youth programs, and kids won't play in the stuff. Like, really? They only want Nike stuff. They only want Jordan brand stuff. They have such a stranglehold in the market.
Really?
Right? I think he said out of like 300-something Div 1 schools in the U.S., it was like 280 or Nike and Jordan.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy smokes. So
there's a whole another thing there and just like brand equity and appeal and how to keep that momentum going. Like, how to keep Nike still cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's still the coolest. So to keep that going is pretty special.
Yeah. And considering you've got like an icon, you're buying the shoe because Jordan wore it. But he hasn't been playing for 20 years.
I've never seen him.
And like, how do you stay relevant? And that is...
My five-year-old's in Jordan gear.
Yeah. You know,
like,
just and they're probably like, who's Jordan? Like, is that a person?
But he loves the logo, the Jumpman logo, everything, right? So it's...
Yeah.
Well, I got a 12-year-old in basketball and he's got the Jordan logo on his headband, but he's in his Steph Curry shoes, right?
Yeah, you know? Okay. Made some inroads.
He's a Steph Curry guy.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I we're always interested in, because we're an entrepreneur podcast, but I love the tie-in to sports. And we're in the training world and we're in the sales world. And there's so many parallels between sports and business, mainly because it's a performance-based industry and business is all about performance. So I'm going to be curious just about your perspective on that as we dive in. But I'm always interested in origin stories of growing up and, you know, was being an entrepreneur like on the radar early for you, or were you more just like the sports kid playing sports and business just came way later in your world? How did it kind of manifest itself in your life?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it came later in life. Well, I guess I kind of know it came later in life. I mean, I grew up in West End, Edmonton. I was always a big like hoops junkie from a really young age, playing community league basketball and outside shooting hoops, thinking I'll get better and this will take me somewhere. And obviously it didn't after high school.
Yeah,
to put it mildly on that sense. And then I got in some roles, you know, worked with Molson right out of U of A, which is a really cool job. For a number of years doing a whole bunch of different sales positions there. And then Sleeman kind of poached me and worked with them as well. And that was really cool because it was building kind of new brands and really taking a lot of market share from Molson Labatt, which was exciting to be a part of. And then jumped into automotive world and marketing side. So went from sales to marketing. I always kind of knew I needed both of those kind of elements. And then with that, really entrepreneurial side kind of kicked in for me. I started doing my MBA. So I was doing that part-time while I was working. And there was a class, it was an entrepreneurial class. I think it was called entrepreneurial, whatever, right? and you had to come up with a business case in it and build kind of a brand, a program, and see it almost right to almost the end of launch, right? And put all the characteristics into what it is and then see if it's viable to actually get going. And so I had this idea that I really want to do, bring like retro vintage logos back. And I saw they were doing them in the States a lot, but nobody's really doing them in Canada. No one's really doing them in Western Canada and Edmonton specifically. And I did some history. I was like, oh, there's some really cool old stories, right? Whether it's the Edmonton Grads, it's the Edmonton Eskimos baseball team from early 1900s, Edmonton Grays, Flyers, all these different cool things. So I thought that was neat. And I went through it. I'm like, oh, let's try to launch like a little business in here, just selling hats and t-shirts and that kind of merch thing. So, yeah, that's where it really peaked for me. So it wasn't until I was like, I don't know, 30 something, wow, I guess, where that itch really came into. And then I kind of, from there, you start spitballing ideas. You're like, okay, cool. Like, let's do merch. Hey, could I try to come up with a beer thing? How do I want to? And then you start thinking about like, well, if you see a little bit of success, even if it's not much, but people start, you know, like what you're doing, or that you get that first, you know, transaction online, or someone gives you money for something that you did yourself, you came to, it's kind of like a light bulb goes in and you're like, oh, maybe I can start doing what I actually want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And I can maybe move on from the jobs I have and making other people money and do something that I really want to be a part of. So that's kind of where it clicked in for me. But yeah, it took a while. I wasn't like the kid selling lemonade and hustling like that. As much as I love to have that story, I wasn't.
Yeah. You were hooping for money.
No, I was kind of doing other stuff. I always had like cool ideas. I just couldn't really put it.
So the real question was, were you sharking people on the basketball court, or were you losing your money on the basketball court? What was really happening there?
I don't know. I claim I'm decent. and I think I am. Cause like I'd get up in the morning, you know, like 6 AM and go shoot hoops before like junior high and stuff. Like I was really into it, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And really believed in it. So yeah, I mean, I can still play. And there's moments like play pickup on Monday nights. And there's moments you hit like 3 threes in a row and you're like, still, you're like, oh, it's the best feeling in the world, right? Yeah. Like it's still there. So once in a while,
you know, it's interesting. You know, you talk about journeys, and when, you know, you said you weren't really like, I'm going to own a business. That clicked for you later. And you used education as part of that. So, you know, there's always this debate, I think, you know, can you teach people to be entrepreneurs? Like, what's the value in that? Or do you need a certain mindset? You know, curious, cause you kind of went down the path of, yeah, I didn't really, sounds like it wasn't like, you know, all you thought about as a younger person, but then something happened. Like, how do you believe mindset plays in all that and teaching and actual formal education on it? Like, what's the connection?
Yeah. I don't think you need the education. I was talking to somebody yesterday and they're like, oh, I'm going to get my degree and I'm going to go get my master's right away. I'm like, that's kind of useless in my opinion. Like, how are you going to be a master? Like, you're going to have your master's degree and you've never even worked. It's like, you're just coming out of school, right? And then you're supposed to like lead people and communicate well and have these good ideas. That seems the opposite of how it should be done. Like, mm-hmm, school and work. And if you want to go back to school, you get that opportunity. Right. Great. But I guess kind of answer that question. I don't know if it's not really taught in a mindset. Like I think I needed the confidence to work for some companies, build up kind of my expertise. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was like, oh, okay. Once I kind of get there, and like I said, like once I did like a lot of sales and marketing, I was like, well, I probably can use those skills I've learned over, you know, 15 years or whatever it was, into kind of doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I probably just needed to grow up a little bit to get to that point, right? Like, mm-hmm, if I would have started a business when I was really, really young, like it would have been okay, but maybe would have failed because I just wouldn't have been ready for that kind of opportunity.
Now, you said something about like you felt like you needed sales and marketing. I'm just curious how, you know, why you feel that those are important skills when it comes to business and having both of those versus just one, because those are very different. And I know we talk a lot about in our world that those words go together so easy, but they're so different. They're so different. So everybody listening, sales and marketing are not the same thing. So yeah. I'm just curious from your perspective, why you felt both would be important and how those have helped you.
Yeah, they are totally different. And I think there's way too many businesses that kind of like group them together and be like, hey, I'm the VP of sales and marketing. I'm like, oh, what? Like, everyone I've met with marketing guys are so different than sales guys in a lot of ways. And there's good and bad to both of that. I think that's important. I think when you're younger, you're seeing people, you know, start their careers and they're getting into law or they're going to be med or doctors or whatever. It's really cool to have that kind of background because you kind of do, you're always going to be somewhat safe. You have the that degree behind you, that designation, you can do it.
Sure.
And that's really cool. And I think now kind of, I don't know, a little bit later in my career, when I see that, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But kind of anybody can do that. Like, not, I mean, it's hard work and everything, but like a lot of people can do those things. But really what fuels kind of creativity and new ideas is people who are passionate about selling things. And then obviously on the marketing side and coming up with new elements. And that's really, I think, what takes businesses or organizations kind of to the next step. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, my current job right now with the Stingers, like we're big on just like coming up with crazy ideas and things that we can do and implementing them, not just talking about them, but how does that actually go to the next level? Mm-hmm. And I think that's honestly way more powerful than you're always going to need accountants. You're always going to need the lawyers. Sure. You're always going to need that kind of stuff. That's great. That to me, that's just like a structure, and mm-hmm. having those good things and frameworks and place and processes is awesome, but you gotta have some different ideas, or, you know, how are you going to stand mm-hmm. out? Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about your latest thing, which, you know, you didn't haven't touched on, which is the Stingers. Like, yeah. How do you get from running kind of, you know, launching your brand, like, you know, which is the, not the Stingers brand, but the, your company that had the, you know, the older companies that are older mm-hmm. teams at Edmonton to the Stingers. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah. So my side business is called Ross Flats, mm-hmm. Vintage Apparel. It's based out of like Ross Flats is the Rossdale area in Edmonton. And that's where baseball has been played for like 100 years. And I sell a lot of baseball stuff, mm-hmm. including the old Edmonton Trappers trademark. So yeah, I was always kind of doing that on the side. I've been a huge basketball fan my life. With the Edmonton Stingers, when they came to town in 2019, I bought like courtside tickets. So I was all in on them. And then even I was kind of a minor sponsor for 1 year. So I knew about the team and the Canadian Elite Basketball League and where it was going. Mm-hmm. I thought it could do better, to be honest. And on it, they won the championship in 2020, and then they won in 2021. And then I think it was September, I saw they were looking for a new president. I was like, well, you kind of just won back-to-back championship. I don't know why you'd get rid of your old president, but I didn't know any of that context or what it was, right? But it was honestly an Instagram post, which I thought was kind of interesting that you would post on Instagram for a president of a role.
That is interesting.
I've never seen that before. So I took a screenshot and I sent it to a friend of mine, Matt McPhee, who is also a consultant with the team, and just said, hey, like, you know, this would be a cool opportunity. Like, is this something I should even try? Am I qualified? Where do I go from here? What do you think? He's like, oh, I'll put you in contact with the commissioner, Mike Morreale. And then we met a few times and things happened pretty quick there. And they took a chance and said, okay, I'll give someone who doesn't really have the typical sports experience. Because what we really need as a team and a league is help on our sales and help exposure. On exposure, yeah. Brand marketing, all that kind of stuff. Okay. You've got that background, and you're a local guy who's got some connections here and stuff. So maybe we'll take a chance and go on
sure. from that. Part. So you said you bought courtside tickets and you felt over those 2 years, you could do a better job. So what did you see? Like, what was that moment where you're like, man, if I was doing this, I feel like I could do a better job. What was it that just kind of...
Well, I think a couple things clicked. I mean, one, like when the CBL started in 2019, it was only 6 teams and nobody really knew about it. Mm-hmm. And then they had to go into a bubble in 2020 and play. And just to get that like done was pretty impressive. And then you come back in 2021, and it's kind of like half COVID, half not. Season starts late. So I think they did, you know, kind of as good as they could with who was running it. But I mean, I know for me growing up and my passion for basketball is great, but I've actually saw the kind of resurgence of basketball in Canada and in Edmonton. And that's probably with the Raptors championship win in 2019. So I thought there was a lot of momentum with it. I also thought that the demographics are changing so much in this city, in this country, and basketball is just becoming even more popular in participation. So I want to tap into that community side more. Mm-hmm. I thought that wasn't really happening at all. So that was a big focus. And then fan experience. You know, I thought like, yeah, you find out. Well, I guess when I started this, I'm like, man, putting on a basketball game or putting on a show, like I was really stressed out about all those elements, the script and all that. And you kind of find out that part kind of happens. Like, I'm not saying it's hard, but it kind of can happen. A lot of people can do that. They have experience. But what about all the other things? Like, you can't control how the game goes in my shoes. I can't, I'm not telling the coach and the GM how to do everything. I can't micromanage on that side, mm-hmm. but I can manage, like, how do we get the fans engaged?
Right.
How do we get them on the floor doing activations and then bring on partners to sponsor that? how do we do more like fan giveaways? How do we make it fun? So like that hour and a half you're going to spend at a Stingers game, whatever, regardless that happens on the floor, you're going to have a blast, right? And that's whether you're going to bring like your kids, it's a family thing, or you're going to bring the buddies and have a night out, whatever the experience is, how do you make that? And I've been to every sporting event in this city. And honestly, I'm not really the guy who sits and watches Oilers games. Like I'm usually talking to people, walk around, seeing what else is going on. I was like that even before I got this role with the Stingers, because I want to see what else is going on.
Right.
Because it's that's to me, like that's where the hard work really comes in. All the different elements, whether it's the kids area or it's this kind of brand experience. And you see that you go to a lot of arenas or stadiums kind of in the US and you see all this other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's really cool, especially like baseball stadiums. It's like four. Pitching things. They got all these different things. So I'm like, how do we do all this stuff, you know, that really gets people to have a great time? Because that's, I don't, for me, that's what stands out.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So so obviously the journey to get the job happened, right? Yeah. You had the conversation. They said, great, you're in. So now you're working for them.
Yeah.
And then there's this, now we're going to throw our own cash into this thing and run it ourselves.
Yeah.
How did that decision-making process go?
Well, yeah, so with the league, the idea always was like start it off, own it centrally and operate it kind of from one hub in Ontario. And that's to really just get it going, because I've seen other leagues kind of fall apart when they have different owners with different levels of kind of financial means and how they want to run things. So it's a model from Major League Soccer where they actually own the teams to start and then sold them off. And the CBL is doing the same thing where, okay, you let it run, get its kind of footing, and then sell off to local investors in each market. So out of the 10 teams now, 7 have been sold.
Oh, wow.
So I knew that's where the future was going. So last year, after our season, I started had a few conversations with people kicking around the idea about investment, what it would cost. And there were some people who kind of got back to her looking at it. But I was kind of figuring, I'm like, okay, let's make 2023 our season. Let's really like showcase, let's take that next step. Like we took a good step last year in terms of attendance and partnership and not winning a championship, but whatever, we'll get past that. but I thought this is really going to be our kind of show me year. So I was like, hey guys, sit tight on this one. We'll come back. And then we'll look at sort of if there is an opportunity to get involved with the team. So while that was happening, a couple other investors or one investor approached the league and said, hey, you know, I'd be kind of interested in talking about, putting a group together with Edmonton. They're like, oh, we should talk to Reed. He's been talking to people. So connected us. That was myself and James Burns. And then he's like, I got another partner who wants to be involved. And that was Tank Vander. He's like, hey, let's all get together and let's move forward with this. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. Let's talk about it. And maybe that will happen in 2024. He's like, well, let's try to make it sooner. So this was, late December. And, I started having conversations with the league. And we're able to turn it around by late January and press conference February. Like it all happened within about 5 or 6 weeks. And it's kind of one of those things like, you know, you're involved and then you're not sure exactly what kind of role you're going to be. And then it just kind of happens and you're like, I'm in. Okay. Here's the cash. Let's move forward. Yeah. And press conference in a week and let's go.
Wow.
And it was one of those things where it took a little while to kind of click in that, I'm going to be involved with that too in my investment and how to make that all work and everything and then move forward. So,
There's been professional basketball in Edmonton before.
Yes. Yeah.
Which didn't work.
Yeah. A couple times.
Yeah. What's different?
that's the main question. Well, okay. So one, like I talked about, Chad, like the league is way stronger than some of these other leagues are in. I mean, whether you want to go back to the Edmonton Skyhawks and in the mid 90s, which I think only lasts maybe a year or two.
I don't even remember those guys.
Yeah. It's a cool logo, actually. I do like the logo. Then there was the Edmonton Chill. They were in a league. I think the only Canadian team was Edmonton. The rest were all American teams. Okay. So the travel really killed them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then that turned the Edmonton Energy, which was really
That's the one I remember.
Same sort of thing. And Paul Sir, who was involved in it, would be the first guy to tell you, like the travel in the U.S., and trying to make up the salaries and no marketing and no kind of sponsors really killed them on that. Right. Yeah. So I think we're already way past those leagues. One, because we're still in existence going into our fifth season. Those ones have died within the first year or two, let's say, being all Canadian is huge on that. And the financial model is actually pretty, pretty reasonable, right? Like we're not, salaries are manageable. The other expenses, are not really that crazy from operational, the operational side of the business. So there is a way to actually, like, if you talk to these other teams, like, is there a way to actually like generate enough revenue to be profitable? And they probably would have told you like, no way from the start. I can tell you that there actually is now.
Yeah.
From looking at it from that lens, I'm like, oh, okay, this can actually be a pretty good business. And then also now I think just the value of sports franchises, like, just keep going up.
I know.
Yeah. It's crazy. So yeah. And you get that from the NBA, like the Suns are worth $4 billion. Apparently the Oilers are worth $1.2 billion.
Well, I heard the Senators are almost, they said 800 million. Now it's almost could be a billion. I'm like, wow. Geez.
And I don't know how the math ever works out on that. And if you ask somebody who does business evaluations, they'd be like, I don't really get it either. But
yeah,
if people are willing to pay for that, and now having a sports franchise is kind of that one trophy for so many different business men or women out there that they're kind of going to pay. It's what the market,
they'll pay whatever, right?
Right.
If you're a multi-billionaire and you want to look exclusive, you're going to go, I want to own a, I want to own a sports team. It
is. So, you know, as well as we can do from our financial model, I do think the franchise value will go up. And there's still three or four teams in our league that got to sell. And I bet when they do, it'll be worth more than what we paid.
Yeah. So in terms of the, just the league as a whole, just curious, like, so you 10, right? And now that's already, I think, the biggest Canadian, all Canadian league out there, right? Because the CFL is 9.
Wow.
Do you see it getting bigger than 10?
Yeah. I think there's probably one or two more markets in the West, cause we're 5-5 right now.
Right.
So we're Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Saskatoon, Winnipeg is in the West.
That's good.
And then in the East is Montreal, Ottawa, and then two in the GTA. So Brampton, Scarborough, kind of, right around the city of Toronto, and then Niagara down in Southern Ontario. So that's a pretty good mix right now. I like that 5-5, but so one or two in the West for sure. And then the East, there's one I know, and then maybe another.
So another four potentially.
Yeah, I could see it. Like 15 was a number they kind of threw out a while ago. So I could see us getting to that. But it's, you know, I think what the league's already seen is, and we've moved a couple franchises around. So like Guelph has moved to Calgary, right? And the response that they've got, and they haven't even played a game yet, has been really good. So I think they maybe thought at the beginning, well, anywhere where there's a CHL team, we could probably play because it's that right size of building, 4,000 to 7,000 seats kind of thing. And those are right markets. And they sort of found out, they're like, oh, no, actually basketball is a big market, you know, opportunity, right? And we actually do better in bigger markets. Like our team in Montreal was with a highest attendance, has some huge sponsors behind it.
Really?
Even though the team sucked, I think they won one or two games this year, but really good response and media wise and everything. So they're kind of figuring like, okay, maybe we shouldn't be in those mid markets. We actually need to be in the big Canadian markets.
Wow. Interesting.
So for, you know, a sports team, I'm just curious about the business side of it. Like, is your guys' role to drive revenue just for the Edmonton team, or is there going to be focus for the league itself to stay viable? Like, what's the relationship between, like, symbiotic about we need to do both, or like, what do you guys just focus on specifically?
Yeah, I don't think this is sharing any details. They're too confidential. Now with the league, when you're looking to buy a franchise, it's actually, so you buy your franchise for your local market and those and that region, but you also buy in with part of the league as well. Okay. So I don't know if that was always a model, but now they're switching it. So to everybody actually has a cut in both the CEBL and you want that to do well, and you're behind that kind of support, and you're behind your own support of your team, which I think is really smart, because it's, you know, we don't want another league to start up and people to be not happy with something and jump to another league. You really want to buy into, and the better the league does in terms of notoriety and exposure and all those things, the better we're going to do too, right?
Yeah, so it makes sense that as the league does better and salaries maybe go up and players, and because you guys are a feeder league in some respects too, don't you? That people get exposure and do really well and then potentially go up to the next level. Is that kind of the transition of this league?
That's entirely a model. I mean, that's why we're a made August league. So everyone can play professionally in Europe or Australia or Asia or in the NBA G League, which is just below the NBA and Wizard Development League. It's entirely a showcase league. Guys come to our league, do well, and then get better contracts is where we want them to go. And I think we're up to 11 guys who have played in the NBA from our league, which is a pretty high number compared to the leagues in Europe or Australia or Asia that are well known.
Wow. So a couple of things you mentioned earlier, you know, you talked about community involvement with the team. Like when you say that, like, and you kind of look at different, you know, obviously you, you've looked at other sporting, you know, franchises probably across North America. You know, kind of what's your strategy with community involvement? Like, how do you create an authentic connection in the community? Like, what's your strategy there?
Yeah. I mean, I knew it was important coming into this role. I didn't really know. And when I got dropped in kind of last year and it was late November, early December when I really got going, it was, you know, I had folks, I'm like, hey, sell tickets, get sponsors, really do that. And community was kind of secondary, but it really clicked in for me, kind of halfway through our season last year. I'm like, you know, like no one's going to, there has to be a bit of trust, especially in like a city like Edmonton. Like if people are going to support you and give you revenue and ticket sales or whatever it is, or be a partner, they need to know that you're kind of out there to helping or giving back, right? In some respect. Mm-hmm. And once they see that, they're like, oh, okay, this guy's, you know, this guy's not full of crap. Like he, they're really doing this. They really believe in this and they're out there. And so, I mean, when we started, you know, a program called Fresh Nets, and we started going around the city and we put up, I think 400 nets last year, just the city of Edmonton, courts. And then we refurbished the whole court at JD Bracco Junior High on the north side. And then we started going to all these high schools and junior highs and college games and running camps. They were free to some kids. Once we started kind of doing that, we saw the business side come back to us, right? There's people who are like, okay, cool, you're out there, we get it, we want to support you too, and you've kind of built that trust with us. I mean, the basketball community in Edmonton surrounding areas is pretty tight. Like it's not huge, right? And they've kind of seen this come and go before, and they're a little bit wary to kind of give any support, at least I felt coming in to a professional league, because like, is this going to be like the chill, yeah, or the energy or whatever it is, and you take some, yeah, money and then you run and you never do anything, you, yeah, know, for us, right? Mm-hmm. So building that back up, with, you know, basically not saying no to any kind of community request or involvement and grinding it out there. Like I need to be the one out there. My team needs to be out there. You know, our head coach and GM need to be out there doing things. When the players get here, that needs to be a huge focus for them. So we kind of got to put our, you got to put your money where your mouth is on that side, mm-hmm, and just kind of hustle and grinding. And that's, you know, people are like, what are you doing? The season's so short. It's like 3 months. What do you do the rest of the time? And I'm like, we're doing stuff every weekend. We're doing stuff every, right, night. Mm-hmm. We're helping out where we can, and trying to kind of give back to basketball. And I think the whole goal is like, basketball isn't a fringe sport. Like people talk about it like, oh, basketball, it's all like Oilers and hockey. I'm like, basketball's like right there. Like it's, oh, yeah, basketball and soccer are going to be the sports of the future in this country, kind of everywhere in the world. Right. Mm-hmm. So, just getting kind of that notoriety out to people, that's more kids who are playing and being involved with it, is only going to help us out.
Absolutely. So you guys furnished some new courts as the goal to continue to do more, yeah, and like identified locations and things. So what's kind of the goal for you guys from that side of things?
Yes. Yeah, so our big program, so the court refurbishment program is called Fresh Hoops. Mm-hmm. So we partner up with the Edmonton Public School Board Foundation on it. One, because, okay, so they can handle all the sort of red tape and logistics on actually getting it done at Edmonton Public School outdoor courts. So we're going to do probably about 50 is our goal. Oh, like, wow, total refurbishment, new pavement, murals, lines, poles, wow, hoops, rims. They got a pretty good donation from the Friends of Go Auto, which are actually going to make that happen. So June 1 is going to be our first one at Delton School, just on the north side of Edmonton. And then we got a few, probably got to try to do about 5 this year. Depends on how many we can actually get to. Logistics on that. But mm-hmm, the cool thing working with them is like they kind of have a list of all the schools in the city, and the ones that sort of need it the most don't have, yeah, the funding that some of the other schools have. So we kind of go down that list. Nice. And then if they have a good basketball program, even that's a check mark, right? But to actually, if we can leave kind of a legacy piece where there's totally courts that are brand new and redone, it just brings the whole community together.
Yeah, I like that, because, you know, as you look at sports, so I'm a big pickleball player, and as the sport grows, there's nowhere to do it.
Yeah.
So nothing kills your enthusiasm and wanting to go do it when you can't do it anywhere. And I could see basketball, you know, when you go there and you see a dilapidated court, no mesh, you throw the ball. Did that go in? I can't tell. Yeah. Like, you know, I could see that as a kid or a group of kids that want to go play, and you're looking around going like, I don't want to spend any time here.
It's sad, man.
It's sad. And yeah, even you might be super passionate about it, so you might spend some time. I think you know, getting the community involved grows the next generation, right? We see that in golf, right? Yeah. All of a sudden, kids growing up weren't going to the major sports and they were starting going, hey, golf is cool, right? Because Tiger changed that. And all of a sudden, instead of going to baseball, they went into golf. And now all of a sudden, there's a lot more of that, right? So I could see that the future of it is through the youth.
Yeah, and that's where kids learn basketball. It's, they're all playing outside, pickup games. That's where you really get into it. And then from there, whatever you want to play, school teams and club and go down that whole road. But you got to have that kind of option. And you've seen in other cities and stuff before, when they do these brand new courts that are really cool, it can just transform the entire community.
Yeah,
people hang out there. It's a way to go. You know, it gives kids something to do in those hours after school before dinner where, you know, there could be a bunch of other stuff that they get involved to. It isn't great. So, I think it makes a big difference. And I'm big on having like tangible pieces, right? It's, you can have a big check and give it to an or charity organization that does good things. I'd rather actually see stuff that you can like point out and see that makes a difference.
I did hear this from somebody who gave me some really good parenting advice, which was, the best kid is a tired kid.
Yeah, that's true.
Board basketball court sounds like a great way.
So, you know, you're relatively new into owning, being an owner. Like you were this person obviously running it for a while. What's been the biggest surprise for you as an owner?
Man, that's a good question. I think one of the biggest surprises is all the details, right? So like transferring the ownership from the league to Stingers Entertainment Group, which is our new company, like all those kind of like the minutiae and the details, is pretty crazy. So that's more work than I thought, but that might be obvious. Probably a bit of the mindset change, right? Like I'm in a bit of a unique role where I am one of the owners, but I'm also doing the day-to-day operations. So I kind of have two different hats on and transitioning between those and what's best for right now. And how do you kind of lead a team? Because some of the things that are good for right now and you want to tell them, I can't share all the insights that I'm having with my other two partners in a future ownership kind of, you know, discussion, right? Mm-hmm. So I think just trying to have that balancing act is kind of, you know, I almost have to remind myself like, okay, hey, this is me talking from like the ownership perspective. This is me talking from the day-to-day, you know, president, CEO, running the business, right? So that's definitely, you know, something I'm still kind of learning to do.
And so what's the dynamic with ownership? Because sometimes we see people that duplicate skill sets, opposite skill sets. You know, are they just more silent investors that are in, or are they involved in day-to-day stuff as well? What's kind of the dynamic for your guys' group?
Yeah, and to be honest, I think we're still figuring out exactly how that's all going to work out because it's still pretty new. But yeah, my two partners are involved. I'm definitely more involved than they are in the day-to-day operations. But I think we all kind of bring kind of unique skill sets for sure. Right. I'll be more of sort of the front face person, doing things like this in media and that, and they'll be more on the back end. But both Jamie and Tank's experience, with running some pretty big organizations is huge for me on just how do we deal with things, the HR perspective, some marketing help, operational perspective, that kind of stuff has been big.
So when you got in touch with them, I'm just curious from your perspective. So obviously they were evaluating you to see if you wanted to be a good partner. You were evaluating them. Yeah. You know, if you were going to go, I'm going to be an owner, and you're already having those conversations by yourself, right? You're trying to figure out, raise money for that. You know, what were you looking for in a partner that you thought this would complement and this would be a benefit? So whoever's coming in, what would they need to bring for you to go, that's really going to help serve the vision I have for going out and doing this? What were you looking for?
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously besides capital, the biggest thing I was looking for, I think kind of having that advisor role and that mentorship and experience, that was big for me. Cause I'm still new into running a professional sports team and sports industry in general. So I think we've done some good things and I got some cool ideas, but I need that long-term perspective on things like, hey, yeah, that's cool. That's great. But what about this? Where are we going to go into the future? So that was big, having that business experience, to kind of throw back, to Jamie and to Tank who have more than that than I do, has been big, has really been huge for us. And those are kind of the characteristics I was looking more and more like they're not the kind of people who are like, yeah, we get like day-to-day stuff. Like you can run that. I'm not going to give you advice on every little thing on that. But where there are sort of bigger strategic ideas, like, you know, let's talk about them as a group and what we want to do moving forward.
Yeah. Okay.
So just curious, you know, ideally, if you could paint a picture of, let's say, three to five years from now, what's happening? Like, where are you at? What's going on? What are you excited about?
Well, yeah. So I think what needs to happen is one, our season is like 20 games, 10 home and 10 away is too short. It's, you know, we're going to start a foundation, our own charitable organization, to kind of fill in those other, you know, 8 months out of the year when we're not really playing and be that sort of the backboard, the cool community stuff that we're already doing. Mm-hmm. We'll have that foundation support us. We're always active doing things and that's great. But when I think about the Stingers from a league and basketball perspective, like we got to extend our season. You know, we want to get to, you know, 24, 30 games. We have to have an affiliation with the NBA. The fact that we have so many guys going to the G League and the Summer League and the NBA, and just our proximity to the U.S. and to the NBA with the Raptors and everything just makes too much sense there. Mm-hmm. It's really easy for them to get a guy from us to come play, then go to Poland and pick a guy out from there. And right. FIBA rules are a little bit tricky and everything. And mm-hmm. and for us to attract players, like, you know, we got a kid coming from Chicago or another guy from L.A. Like, come spend your summer in a place like Edmonton or Calgary or Montreal or something. It's not a huge culture shock, you know, like it's, yeah. it's a little bit easier.
They don't have to learn Polish.
They get that. So there's just so much, there's so many tie-ins. So in 5 years, so I think extended season, I see a real good affiliation with the NBA and I see us in this market, you know, being a real player and, you know, behind the Oilers, because they are the Oilers, and that's always going to be ice being kind of a number two.
Yeah.
And that's a big statement. And that's not
that
a
is
knock
a big
on,
statement
on the CFL or the Elks. But I really believe where basketball is going should be kind of in that level.
Well, you talk about demographics.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's be honest, right? I mean, like I said, I have a son in basketball, and, you know, it's they're overflowing these gyms full of kids wanting to play basketball. Yeah. In fact, my son, you know, I give him a hard time, but he's like, Connor, who? Leon who? No, let's talk about Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Like we watch the Warriors. He watches the Warriors games religiously, right? He doesn't even pay attention to hockey. So I don't know.
Well, and you see it like the city or the Metro League championships was at Scone on the south side and they had at least 300 people they turned away from the gym who want to watch the game, right? And the same thing had the provincial champs who were at Jasper Place in the west end of Edmonton. The same thing happened. They turned away people, right? And even like a Tuesday game, you'll see it here or in St. Albert or Leduc, whatever, the gyms are packed. Mm-hmm. And that was never when I mean, I played ASY.
No, no. The gyms are so small, like you can stand around the outside.
So, yeah, I'm good for them on it. I'm definitely jealous of that. But and spend some time in these schools and you'll see it like, oh man, like everyone's dribbling a basketball around, talking about it. Soccer's probably right there as well. Mm-hmm. I kind of see a future. If we ride that and do things the right way, we should
do you see
that?
I mean, do you see it not only the Raptors, but, you know, the number of Canadians now playing in the NBA and the success of the men's national team, right?
Totally.
Do you see that as influencing participation as well?
Yeah, and I think so. And that's why we've seen it, you know, especially in like Toronto and Quebec, where there's actually like guys from your hometown in the NBA playing now, putting up big numbers. And Western Canada, we're a little bit behind, but I think it's going to happen pretty quick. Mm. And once we see that, we'll see it take a whole nother step up.
Hey, right? There's a guy from Saskatoon.
Yeah. Trey Lazar. Yeah, I think he's kind of Saskatoon or whatever, but still there is that, but there's some really high quality ball being played in Alberta, even more than BC right now. And guys going Div 1 scholarships and we'll see them kind of get there. That'll be the next step.
I'm curious how you balance this. And I apologize, I don't know his name, but you guys had an all-star when you guys were winning your championships and then he went to
Xavier
the next
Moon.
Level. Yeah. So as an owner, you know, you want to win. But as this league is kind of designed to have people be successful and go get contracts, how do you balance like you know, wanting them to stay so we can win, having them go and feel good for them, but knowing that, oh, like I'm just curious how I feel like you're in a rock and a hard place between the success you want of the franchise winning, bringing it to the fans, being there for the players. Like, how do you juggle that?
Yeah, that's something we talk about. And so, Xavier Moon was our point guard. We won a couple championships. And then last year he got called up for 3 10-day contracts with the Clippers. And then this year he signed a 2-way deal with the Clippers. And every time he gets into an NBA game, like the guy impacts. Like he'll get 2 minutes and he'll put up 4 points and 3 assists and a rebound or something. Like he's that impactful of a player, even though he's kind of undersized compared to NBA guys at like 6'1". I kind of feel like the more success he gets, it gives us more credibility as a league, right? And and also so he can talk to, and he has talked to guys on his G League team and whatever, and say like, hey, I went to Edmonton and it really developed my my skills and got me to this level, right? You should think about this CBL too. That and that kind of word of mouth around basketball players, and we see signed some guys this year when it's all come from like this sort of word of mouth of talking to a guy like Xavier. So I think it builds us up. It's a bit more of a long-term goal. Like we went down to LA this year to go talk to him and pitch him on coming back and playing. It's like, hey, your two ways done. Come play a few games with the Stingers, you know, and then go back to the Clippers or Summer League or whatever you want to do after that. And that might still be a possibility. But it's got to be its best for them, man. Like, how can you hold a guy back from going to the NBA?
Of course.
The money's dramatically different. You know, like, if you're, you know, I don't want to say scrub, but you're not even a guy starting. Like, Kelly Olynyk from Kamloops, BC, it makes $15 million a year. I mean, it was more than Connor McDavid, and he doesn't even start most games and gets 10 to 12 points, right? Like, so you can't hold a guy back from that generational kind of wealth opportunity, but it's tough. And I guess you'd even look at, like, the Trappers, who were minor league team here for 20-something years, and that was always their thing. They get guys who are really good, AAA ball, and then they get called up, and then they kind of lose it, right? So, I think you got to take the approach as it's better for the league in general.
I like it's a mindset thing. I like that because on the radio today, it's interesting. Some of the radio broadcasters were talking about the Trappers, all the old logos, which I had no idea there was teal and red, and they were going through and they were talking about how they were actually designing them in one of the baseball sports games. You could import logos and then make your own Trappers teams.
And, cool.
And I was like, wow. And so some of the game platforms allow you to put fan art and logos. And then as we were talking today, I was like, man, I wonder if they're getting all their logos from you because they're putting that stuff in there. But
yeah, no one's tapping me for those.
Yeah, I'm interested that it's a mindset of like it helps the league as they become more and more successful, which, you know, I think it's beneficial for everybody.
So a question about a little bit about brand. I know you said, you know, the Oilers are the Oilers and obviously they're the pinnacle in the NHL. You can't play a higher league than that. But, you know, I think maybe the Edmonton Elks suffer from this a little bit, too. It's like people connect with players and, you know, it's almost the player versus the team now. And if you don't know the players, how do you connect with the team? Right. And I don't know what your strategy or how you guys think about that. But I know, like, my kid, you know, Steph Curry. Right.
Yeah. And that's tough because we do have a short season. Our players will come in like mid-May and could be gone by, you know, mid-August. So it's not a lot of time to connect. And it doesn't mean there's a lot of community hours in between practice and games and travel and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, one of the big focuses I want to do with this team is, you know, kind of for Edmonton, by Edmonton model. So like from me and the ownership group to the GM, to the coach, the assistant coaches, and a few players are all guys from this area and this community, right? And I think if you really want to get a tie into your fans, like a guy like Ahir Ugwuok, who's going to play for us the second year, he'll be playing, grew up in Millwoods, went to Harry Ainlay High School, got a Div A scholarship at La Jolla Chicago, went to the Elite Eight 1 year, is now playing in first division in Germany, is coming back, right? Like, so when kids can, and you see, when he comes to a game and they do the autograph, we do autograph sessions after every game and people just flood the court. It's a little bit chaos, but I like that side of it. You know, I want to keep that. And again, selfies, he is mobbed by like 200 kids, right? Because they see him and they resonate to his story and everything, right?
Because really he's from Millwoods.
He's from Millwoods.
He's not from some other, like.
And there's a couple other guys, you know, like there's Ben Kricke, who's from West Edmonton, and he played Valparaiso, had like a crazy year, like 20 plus points a game. And now he just committed to Iowa, which is one of the best programs in the country.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, maybe there's a chance he comes and plays for the Stingers after he's done that, right? And helps him. Because I think what Ahir did is like, so he finished his NCAA career, played with us showcase, and then he got to play in one of the other best leagues in the world in Germany, right? Div 1 there right away because of how well he did. He had a tryout with the Orlando Magic too. So, you know, his kind of thing, I think a lot of people can use that pathway, but the more local representation we can get, you know, and even we do a U Sports draft, we get somebody from the U of A or maybe there's a McEwen or a Nate guy and they can be practice players or be involved in some degree. I think that connection goes a long way.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're doing that not just in the season, but all throughout the year.
Interesting. Are you getting people from the U of A playing on the Stingers? I think you did have one.
Yeah, trailer. Yeah. I think there's a good chance this year we could have somebody too. Yeah, it's not public yet, but there could be a good chance of that. I think that's big. And then I guess the other part of it is, you know, in a market like Edmonton that is, you know, a decent size, people want to see a connection to the NBA in that. And that's what, like, it's so good about Xavier Moon. It's like, hey, you got to play for the Stingers, and then you can actually be in the NBA and you can watch him on ESPN putting up points.
Right. Did you know you could play him in NBA 2K?
Oh, yeah?
My son did.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he put him on his team.
There you go.
Yeah, so there that's is cool. a connection.
Yeah, so yes. there's a balance there. Like, let's get as many local guys, and not just guys I want to put on a team just because they're from around here.
Yeah.
They can actually play, and they deserve to be here. Right. And then when we do get these, you know, these big name American guys or international guys on here, that they are involved in the community, they're around doing everything they can, and they have that connection to the next level.
Wow. So as you talked about the vision about, you know, connecting to the NBA and the things that you see, whose responsibility is that? Is that for the league to go create those relationships? Is it about on the ownership side? Like, who, how would that come to fruition, and who's going to be spearheading that, just from your view?
Yeah.
How do you think that's going to get done?
It's probably going to be Mike Morreale, our commissioner, kind of leading that charge. And he's well aware of that, and he gets the same vision that I kind of have on that. So he was kind of leaning, but that doesn't mean that, you know, maybe us with the Stingers can't have connections, and, you know, just because, you know, Xavier's with the Clippers in that organization, maybe we should have some kind of working relationship with the Clippers and their G League affiliate, where it's, you know, they got 15 guys on a G League team, and a lot of them don't see a lot of, you know, a lot of playing time, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a feeling, hey, go here and you can play in this kind of the CBL, which is almost like an NBA summer league sort of type. And then maybe you come back to us and we'll put you through. I think we can start building some of those relationships with individual teams in the NBA. And I think it would work out for both of us.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that.
So, you know, as the leader and kind of the front face, you know, like when you talk about just leading people in a team and kind of getting the best out of, you know, you're obviously not on the court, but the people who are part of this thing.
Yeah.
What do you, as a leader, what do you think is the most important thing that you need to bring to the table to help, you know, kind of the organization elevate?
Yeah, it's interesting in sports. Like, one, they'll say, like, people who are in sports do it because they have a serious passion. They want to be a part of it. Like, nobody's getting paid their worth at all, right? I found that out pretty quick. You know, I get it clear to myself. So I think one is you got to find people who have that passion and really want to do it and really believe in sort of what you're doing and the vision that you have for the team and the overall organization. Mm-hmm. Once they have that, I mean, I think you can lead them and help them kind of build that structure and that process, because that could be a little bit foreign. Like, we have a lot of junior people that we hire, and that's okay because they're passionate about it, but they might not have that kind of experience that we need, or knowledge of really the right way of doing it. So, it's finding that, and I kind of think the right way. It's also like, we can get bogged down in some of the details in sports, and it can be long hours and stuff. And that's, you know, that can get a little bit draining. And you got to, like, we had a meeting last week and I was like, guys, we're running a basketball team here. Like, we got to have some fun. This. Like, this is pretty cool. Right. Like, not many people get this opportunity to do this and you're doing it in your home city. Like, that's, you know, that's really powerful. So you gotta kind of be able to kind of live in the moment, which you can, and be a part of it. And what's the point of doing this if you can't have a little bit of fun with it, right? Absolutely. Like, you know, that's not, I got to do it. You want to be able to do it. So,
yeah. So you've had Ross Flats for going on 6 years, been with the Stingers. I'm just curious about, you know, major missteps and things like that from an entrepreneur standpoint, about, you know, lessons you've learned along the way where we thought this was a good idea or we tried this and it didn't work out the way you thought. Any lessons that you want to share over your journey over the last 6 years or so?
Yeah, I think when I started Ross Flats, like, you know, one of the lessons I learned is, like, if you've got an idea and you think it makes sense, just run with it. And now, like starting an online business, selling merch, is not that complicated, right? A lot of people can do it. Why? A lot of people do it, right?
Yeah.
And there's not a huge amount of startup costs. So don't get bogged down in some of the details about how's it all going to work? What are we going to do? What's my marketing plan going to be like? Well, I don't have that much money. Like, just move forward and just see if it's actually something that people care about,
right?
And do it. And once you start getting money from people, you realize, oh, this is cool, or they don't like it and be like, that's a bad idea, but you got to try it out. Mm-hmm. Right. So take a chance. But everyone says that. If I would look at it, like we're now me running that on the side of obviously this job, I'm not putting a ton of effort into it as much as I would like to, because I just don't have the time on it. So I would say, and I probably would think that there was a time when I really could have, I can still scale it if I want to, but I think there was a moment when I probably could have really invested more money and time into it and got it to a place where I could have scaled it really well and maybe taken it across the country more than what it was. And I probably missed that moment. Not that it can't come back, but I probably missed that. So I think if you see that, you know, jump on the opportunity mm-hmm. when you can and start it, like go full throttle with it and see what happens. Right. So that's, kind of my advice on that.
I think everybody knows somebody who had a great idea that did not execute and somebody else did it. They go back and go, that was my idea. But there's a big difference between the idea and execution. And you'd say that earlier that, you know, part of what the Stingers do well is executing on not just talking about stuff, but actually getting it done.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally. Right. And I think everyone has those kind of whiteboard sessions. You put ideas on out there and I'm like, hey, well, like, what's the next steps on this? Cause like nothing drives me crazy. I'm just like, yeah, we're just bullshitting at a bar and we're talking about stuff and people will tell you the same thing. Like before 4 or 5 times, I'm like, just do it, man. Like, what are you doing? Figure it out. Like, and now, I mean, I think starting a business so many ways a while ago was way tougher. Like if you want to start now, like even if it's just basic steps, like, I don't know, start a website. You got 15 minutes. You know, start an Instagram account, like, right. You know, get PayPal connected. Like, it's not that complicated on that end. So I think just run with it and take a chance. And
so are you the idea guy or are you the get her done guy?
I think we've got a lot of great ideas across the organization. And obviously I want people to come with the crazy shit ideas. I want to hear them. I think I'm a bit of both for sure. Yeah. Right. Like we had, I saw an idea they're doing states like this hoop bus and they go around all the US and it's really cool. And the NBA is tied into it. I'm like, well, why don't we do it? So we kind of put together and bought a bus for $1 off a company and put a hoop on the back of it. It's getting deckled next week and it's going to be around all these community events. And like, so we kind of just took an idea that we saw somewhere and how do we make it our own and run with it. Right. So I think you gotta be, definitely a bit of both now.
So obviously we're an Edmonton-based podcast. We talk about Edmonton business. You know, being a sports team based in Edmonton, there's a lot of connection to the city. What do you feel is unique or different about doing business in Edmonton?
Yeah, good question. I mean, people tell you relationships for sure. I think Edmonton's in a bit of a unique spot where there is a lot of relationships, and when you've been here for a few years and doing stuff, you can't go to an event and not run into 5 or 6 people. Like it's kind of that tight knit community. But I think a lot of people just rely too much on those relationships. Like, well, I knew this guy, we went to high school together, or we worked together here and we should be able to make this together. Like you still got to have an actual business case and why this makes sense and actually be able to tell him what the pitch is and why it is. So you kind of, I think that's what's unique is the relationship stuff kind of gets you in the door but you still got to have an actual business idea. And there's large companies in this market. And if you don't have something that sort of makes sense and checks off their boxes, like, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. It doesn't matter how tight you were at guy's bachelor party or whatever it was, right? Like it has to be that. But it is a bit of a unique market on that sense where the relationship side does have a lot of weight still.
So where can people go to connect with you, the Stingers? Where can we send people?
Yeah. I mean, on my LinkedIn, you can find me. That's one way to connect. Thestingers.ca. You'll find all the information there. So check that out. And if you're interested in some kind of vintage sports apparel, rosslats.ca, you can check that out too.
Awesome. You know what? We really appreciate your time today and your insight. And we're really excited about, seeing where the Stingers go in the next few years. Should be fun.
Yeah, definitely should be fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. Appreciate it. That's a wrap. Episode over. You know what to do. Please leave a review. Subscribe would mean the absolute world to us.